Stan, if you have a large municipality, they have to have a wastewater discharge permit to operate a sewage facility, right?
That's true.
If they violate that, you have the ability now to levy a large fine on them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, yes.
You have the ability to impose conditions on that permit. If there was a large plant, you have the ability now to say that we believe that you should have a certified operator there 24 hours a day. You have that ability now?
Mr. Chairman, I think so.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, just with that in mind, I would be more comfortable with the bill if we probably make a first step. I'd like to see the exemptions raised a little bit and not make it 24-hour mandatory and everything, and I think it'll be a beginning, and 2 years from now, the people will all be back here and they can make things stricter if they want. I've been a little concerned right along about the smaller communities and not knowing exactly what's out there. I had a visit with Phil Fell today because I've been digging him to talk to these small communities, see what's going on, and he's had a problem. He says you've called some of these little towns, you get the city recorder, their public works crew might be one or two people, and they can't even find them. So he really has not been in that good a touch with the small cities. And anyway, that's just my general philosophy, and I think it makes sense.
Would you also say, Representative Parkinson, if we have an epidemic in middle of no place, doesn't make any difference to the rest of us? No.
Absolutely not. having worked a little bit with DEQ in the past, not only on this committee, but as a local mayor, I know that they do have a lot of clubs they can use right now.
Let me ask, and since we're talking about the exemption figure, we proposed figures 300, and I think Representative Parkinson talks about 500. Can you give us a sense of what difference that would mean in terms of the number of systems covered? Stan? We're talking about now the water side. Maybe how about Art? Do you want to come up? Oh, you okay? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, on the drinking water systems, our current inventory indicates that there are some roughly 50 additional communities that fall in the category between 300 connections and 500 connections. So there would be, if that number is changed from 300 to 500, there would be some additional 50 communities that would not be required to have a certified operator on staff.
Would it be your understanding that if we didn't make that kind of exemption, there might be some interest at a future time of including some of those others?
I guess, Mr. Chairman, my personal feeling is that the problem that we see with the smaller communities is in the lack of training. And in the larger communities, this is not a problem. Most larger communities already have a number of certified operators on staff, and in most cases have 24-hour supervision. But the small communities do not get that training that would, in our case, help protect the public, ensure that we had safe drinking water. So it's our feeling that we would like to see that number fairly low in order to encourage people to have a certified operator on board. I would expect then that we might be back in a couple of years after we have developed some better figures to see just what numbers we have certified and what our disease outbreak statistics might look like then.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I guess because I've been semi-involved in all of this and heard Mr. Boydston's arguments and some of the other people's arguments for the 300 gallons, I would support that. I think it definitely is a health issue, and I realize sometimes it's a hardship with small communities, but I think when we're talking about drinking water that we probably ought to be more safe than regretful in the end. So I would support the 300 service connections.
Anyone else? Let me ask Representative Parkinson. Fred, where are you on this?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess now we heard the testimony, Jervis. Who can tell me how many, can somebody here tell me about Jervis's drinking water and their sewage and how many workers they have, whatever. How would it affect them? I don't know why I'm picking on them, but
Mr. Chairman,
they fall between 300 and 500, don't they?
In terms of drinking water, I don't know about drinking water. In terms of sewage, we've got 150,000 gallons a day. One FTE operator.
Do we have a certified person in charge of that plant?
Our information is that their operator just left the community, and they're in the, and he was, or she was, certified, and they're now looking for another one.
So this is for the sewer system?
That's for the sewer system.
Do we have any information on the water system?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, the only figures that I have with me today indicate Jervis has a water system population of about 750, which would be, we would estimate would be about 300 connections, so probably right on the border. Jervis is a groundwater system and does not have a conventional water treatment plant, and doesn't have the degree of complexity in the system that some of the other small systems would have. But and I can't tell you whether that operator is certified or not.
What else? I'd like to move this along. It does go to Ways and Means. Let me suggest something if anybody wants to pick it up. We like to think of 100s and 300s and 500s, but we're not stuck with those odd numbers. We could have a 400, we could have a 350, we could have whatever.
Mr. Chairman, would there be a way maybe for the various departments grant a variance for a period of time or something? Now, what if the city of Jervis can't all of a sudden find a new operator? And take two departments, I guess you'd have the health department in charge of one variance and the DEQ in charge of the other variance.
Mr. Ashton, in reference to the variance, wouldn't be better off to set a figure that would be maybe a little higher and not do the variance business? If you're going to do a variance, you'd have to adopt rules and go some sort of standards, which makes the whole thing much more complicated, doesn't it? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, there's no provision, I don't believe, for variances in here currently, so we would need to add a provision for variance and then either in statute give some guidance or criteria for the basis for the variance or allow that to happen through rulemaking by the two agencies.
Where are the sections? Yeah, Representative Peterson.
Well, I was about ready to make a motion. Maybe I'm too early here.
Well, why don't we see if we can, because I'd like to accommodate people and before we have a motion, so it does have to go to Ways and Means, but I think it ought to be the kind of shape we want before that happens.
Mr. Chairman, John Stoner, Section 22 does give a full year after the effective date for these sections become effective. And this would be more than adequate time for any one of the individuals who's familiar and has operated that water distribution system in Jervis to become certified. The cost of certification, $25 examination, and a book to study on that would run the neighborhood of $40, $50 at the most to take a full course on a correspondence level. So we do not feel that the cost of getting an operator certified is going to be that extreme or to maintain it in that particular respect.
Representative Anderson.
Section 2 and Section 10 requires rulemaking by both health and, right, and DEQ. And maybe we could get some legislative intent here. We have two things that we're discussing about variance. What happens when somebody quits? We obviously in the rulemaking have to address that. Otherwise, we're in these little jurisdictions in violation of the law. The other would be that in rulemaking, they should take under consideration supervision and what is meant by that. And I would like to see, particularly the DEQ, in their rulemaking hearings process to address some of the, even though they're computerized, operations that are having accidental bypasses and spills, and the advisability of having full-time coverage on these larger operations. And if that's good enough for the intent, why, let's move the bill.
I think that makes sense. Representative Parkinson.
I hate to hang up the committee on this. Would it be wise...
But you will, but you'll try.
But I will. Would it be wise, maybe we could ask the two officials from the two different agencies out here to let the size, the excluded size, be determined by rule, maybe? Because I can see one water system that's coming out of some pure wells or something that they're not too concerned with, another water system the same size, maybe, where they have to put it through a treatment plant that would be an entirely different thing. Maybe that would be the best way to go, that they'd determine that by rule.
Anybody want to respond?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, in the current certification program, there are a number of classifications of operator, and is it class one that is the lower grade operator that does not require anywhere near the amount of training or examination? So we would anticipate that the rules would specify a similar number of classifications of operator depending upon the complexity of the system.
Let me ask, it's probably still more up on having a figure, minimum figure, but then if there's an understanding that you would have in your rules an opportunity to talk about the variance, I wonder if that wouldn't take care of it.
I think maybe it would.
Okay.
But there's nothing in the rule now, but in the bill, I think, that allows for... give a variance.
Right, but our record would show that this would be the intent of the committee, that you would have this variance authority on this kind of an issue. Let's take one quick look before we have a motion on the bill to understand what the amendments. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I think Mr. Biles had a comment.
Yes, Dan.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess the concern, when our commission has always gotten into the issue of variances from state statute, I think the advice that we've received from the Attorney General is that our commission needs specific statutory authority to grant a waiver from another statute. And I don't mind saying here that we could, between now and the Senate committee, work with people to put the language together and propose it over there or do it here. But I think that if the committee's intent is to have the commission grant variances, that it should be stated somewhere in the act before it leaves the legislature.
Well, why don't we do that? That's a good suggestion, because this goes to Ways and Means. I'd like to get it to Ways and Means. If we can operate on the understanding that we're going to ask the Senate to put in a section on variance. These other little changes we can make right now, and they can come into the enrolled version, but I just do not have to bring this back for other amendments.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Parkinson.
If this goes to Ways and Means, wouldn't it go right to the Senate floor from Ways and Means?
No. It'll have to come to the House floor.
Well, yeah, House floor, and then it would go to the
Senate committee.
Okay.
Yeah, it could bypass the Senate committee, but I think it'll like to go to the committee. Take a look at the bill, and so we get clear what the amendments are. Page 2, line 8, removing the phrase "sewer treatment works or," that's gone. Page 3, line 13, the word "is" after operator. Okay, that's it, isn't it? Are those all the little changes, as far as you can tell? Do we have any objections to those amendments to the bill? Not. Mr. Peterson, you said you had an amendment.
Yes, I would move the amendment, House Bill 3386-2.
As amended.
As amended.
To the Ways and Means Committee.
Mm-hmm. To Ways and Means.
All right. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parkinson.
That's fine, but it is with the understanding that we're going to work on a waiver provision and submit it to the Ways and Means Committee.
And I will check with Ways and Means and with the Senate to make sure that that's done. Okay. The clerk will call the roll. As a matter of fact, Representative Parkinson, is mine. Intent that when this comes to the floor that you will carry it.
Thanks.
I'll teach you.
Even though Representative Peterson did most of the work, but we figured out a way to spread this around.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Brea.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Parkinson.
Aye.
Representative Peterson.
Aye.
Representative Phillips.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye. I want to thank Representative Peterson for the work she did do on this bill, and the representatives of the DEQ and the Health Division, the water people, and others. And I want to thank Representative Parkinson for the work we're still going to do on the bill. Thank you. Yeah, it'll be a better bill. We're getting there. I think it's a good issue. And with that, I will close the hearing on House Bill 3386. Kat, will you call the AG's office and see if they can locate for us Representative Eakin? He's over there, and we need him on House Bill 3072. But while we're waiting for him, we will open the work session on Senate Bill 535. Okay, we'll do that.
I couldn't even figure out what the what are we doing there, sir?
Five three five. I can't remember. Do I have a folder for 535? Here it is.
You
don't think there are, but let's look at them.
You want a reputation for being an unorganized person.
Is there
Click.
Yes,
Mr. Biles?
Number?
Sam, why don't you and David come up? Well, if we can't find him when we get to it, since we don't want to be held up, we may get out of here very shortly. Call him staff and ask if we can get a hold of him in the AG's office, and we need him down here. No, we'll go ahead with it.
I couldn't even find it if it was
welcome.
There.
Why don't you, we have had the hearing on this bill, but this is the first work session. Why don't you tell us what it is? I understand we don't have any proposed amendments on it.
Mr. Chairman, Stan Biles, Department of Environmental Quality. When the state in the early 70s first got into the hazardous waste business before there were any federal regulations, it was after the famous or infamous Alkali Lake incident where a large number of hazardous waste barrels were rather promiscuously disposed of. The director at the time, as I understand, and this is a history because we really don't have anybody in the agency, but the director at the time felt that the only way for the state to get a better handle on hazardous waste disposal in the state was for the state of Oregon to own the hazardous waste disposal facility. You could then never have a company coming in, disposing of drums, and then skipping town, or in this case, skipping the state. And so language was put in state statute that required the state of Oregon to own the hazardous waste disposal site. A few years passes and a new federal regulations go in place, state regulations go in place, and the facility at Arlington, Oregon is opened with all of the accompanying regulations. Due to this statute, every time that facility opens a new cell for operation, that property is deeded over to the state of Oregon. With the new federal acts that have come along, it has changed the situation considerably, and now the state, as a co-owner or sole owner of those disposal facilities, assumes all of the accompanying liability under the federal act. We have felt that probably isn't appropriate for the state of Oregon to do that would be cleaner and more proper to rest with the operator of that facility. The second concern behind Senate Bill 535 is that under federal definitions, disposal sites can also include spills of hazardous materials where those spills cannot be cleaned up to background levels. And that often happens, particularly if groundwater is contaminated, that there's just no way to clean it up to background levels. Under those definitions, the state of Oregon could be interpreted as having to own all of those various spill and release sites from around the state. We think that's unfair and an enormous burden on state liability. Senate Bill 535 deletes those requirements that the state of Oregon acquire ownership of hazardous waste disposal sites, either at Arlington or elsewhere. Very brief background. It also includes in Section 5 a provision that maybe Mr. Burroughs, and I don't know if we already spoke to the committee about that, but it it concerns is the Arlington site has essentially been quote-unquote subdivided as individual parcels have been deeded over to the state. It has created in the minds of some an illegal hazardous waste subdivision, if you will. Our intent of Senate Bill 535 is approved, and I believe the company is acceptable to this, is that we would deed back all of that property that we have taken over in the years gone by, deed that back to the company that currently operates the site, and let them own the entire facility, and in doing so would unscramble this hazardous waste illegal subdivision that has been established over the years.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Parkinson.
Stan, do you mean Kim Security will take back those cells without any compensation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, I would like to be able to say yes, but I think Mr. Barrows had better answer that.
Mr. Chairman, I saw Kim or Waste Management, the parent company's financial statement, their profit and loss, and it doesn't look to me like they'd operate that way.
But they got a fortune.
Mr. Chairman, they should be in the fortune, right.
Mr. Chairman, Dave Barrows, Kim Security Systems, Inc., the company that owns and operates the portion of Arlington that the state doesn't own. We are in support of this bill. When we deed the land over to the state, Representative Parkinson, the state pays us a dollar, as I recall. And so whether or not we obtain a dollar on the return, I don't, as you point out, I think probably is not real critical to the company's profit position. But I think it's important for the committee to also understand that even during the period where we have deeded these cells over to the state, I think it's very clear in the minds of all attorneys that understand this fully that it in no way has diminished the responsibility of the company. So the state has assumed some responsibility that probably doesn't need to, and the company hasn't, in other words, there's not just a finite amount of responsibility and we divide it up. We're still 100% responsible, and we have to put up large bonds for the operation of the facility, for the closure of the facility, for post-closure, and so whether or not the state has title of these cells or not is immaterial to the company, and we think probably it's sort of a law that's kind of time has passed.
Other questions or comments? That particular part of it was amended into the bill by the Senate.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Representative Parkinson.
I think I know, but could one of you explain to me the re-aggregation? Is that the lot of record thing? Section 5.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, that is. That section, I think all of Section 5 is the amendment.
That is correct.
Approved by the Senate.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, if we had to go through a lengthy land use series of proceedings in order to just have the state deed it back to us, put us back to where we all were at the start, our interest would probably be less than to accomplish the purpose of this bill than it would be with Section 5 in there. We're happy to take it back. We don't want to spend a lot of time and effort and agony unscrambling a hazardous waste subdivision, which I don't think probably is real saleable.
Do we have any amendments?
No, we have no amendments.
Ready for motion?
Yes. No more questions out there. Bob, I'll accept the motion.
I'll move Ian Grill Senate Bill 535 to the floor with the Dukas recommendation.
Then move to send this bill to the floor of Representative Soa.
Well, I support the bill. I really hesitate to send a Senate measure out without at least some amendments. But
well, it's not the first time we've done it, but you have a point. Anyone else? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Representative Brea.
Aye.
Representative.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Parkinson.
Aye.
Representative Peterson.
Aye.
Representative Representative Song.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. See on this bill, you want to carry this bill, Representative Parkinson?
I don't want to carry all the bills.
Well, the other one.
Yes, I'll carry
it. The other one, we may be a while before we see the other one back.
Sure.
And and I would ask Representative Soto if you'd carry the supervisor bill, which we passed out a few minutes ago. We close the hearing then, or the work session on Senate Bill 535, and we'll open the work session on House Bill 3072. Are we ready, Tarika?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3072, as it was originally introduced, was legislation designed to do one thing, which was take the telecommunications, the current PUC statutes that apply to telecommunications, separate them out and into separate statutes so that the language in the PUC statutes that applied to energy and transportation and water as well as telecommunications would now have a separate statutory scheme for telecommunications. That's being done because of the nature of the changes in telecommunications industry are such that it's an increasingly competitive industry and increasing deregulation. And I think in anticipation that we would continue, the legislature would find itself in a position of continuing to do with what we did with 2200, which was begin to develop statutes that were specific to telecommunications rather than statutes that would apply to everything that the PUC regulates. I want to emphasize that it doesn't take it out of the PUC regulation. It simply would set up within the PUC regulation separate statutes specific towards telecommunications. And this bill does that and does it in an objective manner. The attempt was to do it without making any substantive changes. As you can see, it takes a lot of paper to do that. It's quite a big job. The subcommittee, I believe, felt that this takes a lot of review. The Royal Pacific Northwest Bell and the PUC had already reviewed much of the proposed legislation, as well as some of the other interested parties who may or had some, I think, reservations about whether this separations needs to be done or not. Some of those did review it as best they could to make sure that it was done in an objective manner. I think the subcommittee came to the conclusion that, one, separating it out is a good idea, but two, your subcommittee and the legislature itself not have an ample opportunity to do review. I cannot, for example, hold this up and say we have reviewed this on a section-by-section basis. We would be put in a position of simply saying we'll take the word of the PUC and of PNB. The approach then we decided to take was, assuming that we believe this is, yeah, I never want to do that. And I think we recognize, you know, that a very sincere effort and a lot of work had gone into this, but if you recall other revisions which we've made, like motor vehicles division and everything else, it takes a great deal of time because you have to make sure, despite what your intent is, that it's done right and it's done objectively. In fact, you have a set of amendments here that is based upon changes that came from the PUC and PNB review of the bill that was initially introduced. I think that's an example of the kind of review it takes to make sure that, that we get it right. We took the assumption that this is a good idea. So we developed amendments that said two things. One, it's a good idea and therefore it will become law in July of 1989. In between time, during the sessions, we will establish a review committee. That review committee will review 3072 as we pass it. We'll review what we have adopted as law effective July 1st. In that process, we may identify other changes that are necessary to meet our objective, which is to separate the statutes on a non-substantive change basis. And we'll then make recommendations to the 1989 legislature as to further changes that need to be made. That way we get the review done. The legislature then can take those proposed changes, make those changes, and if they in fact determine that they didn't like our first assumption, which is that it shouldn't be done in the first place, they can repeal the whole thing because it won't become law until after we've done the review and after the next legislature has taken an opportunity to decide whether